I'll call our meeting to order. Councilor Juan Carlos Gonzalez and Council President Lynn Peterson are excused. We do have a quorum, and I will now ask Councilor Lewis to provide the safety briefing.
Please note that we are on the third floor of the building. In the event of a fire or fire alarm, please exit through the door in the northeast corner of this room, go down the steps to the second floor, and exit through the main entrance by the reception desk. We will meet in the courtyard outside that entrance. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the front desk. The nearest defibrillator is mounted on the steps leading from the reception desk down to Grand Avenue, like kind of below us. And a fire extinguisher is located in the corridor to the right of the dais as you leave the chamber.
Thank you. Now, if anyone wishes to testify on an item that is not on our agenda, now is the time to do so. I have two signed up, and if you would like to be included, please fill out one of these blue cards that are located in the back and turn them in to our council clerk. But I now ask Art Llewellyn and John Charles to come forward.
He was here before me.
We can let Mr. Charles go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Charles, President of Cascade Policy Institute. I'm testifying actually on an agenda item, but if that's okay, proceed now.
You can do that now or wait, whatever is
now's,
preferred.
Now's fine.
Okay.
So I am here to, I know that intellectual diversity is a core value of yours, so I'm here to offer a minority perspective on this agenda item. The funding for, I'm talking about the funding and the grants, the Nature of the Nature neighborhood grants, and it has to come from a specific source, namely, the, according to your staff, 2016 levy. And I have here the official Exhibit B ballot title that you used when you referred it out in 2016. And it has says the result of a yes vote. And there's five bullet points, which I'll just summarize briefly. Maintain and improve water quality. Restore habitat. Restore wetlands. Provide more parks and trails. And finally, increase opportunities for children from low-income families and communities of color to connect with nature. Now, that last bullet point is arguably the only one that opens the door to some of the grants you're proposing today, but I think you've really gone way beyond opening the door. I don't see anything in the levy language you referred to in 2016 that authorizes you to spend $100,000 for a jobs training program for young black kids to intern with generic environmental groups that may have nothing to do with green spaces. $64,000 for enhanced backyards just in Washington County. Backyards are great, but where do ratepayers, do we just trespass onto people's property to go enjoy these backyards that we've all paid for? Depave, create maybe 10,000 square feet of new green space at a cost of $42,000. Now, I was here in 2005 when the whole Nature and Neighborhoods program was created. And the original purpose was designed to incentivize voters to vote for the whole bond package. I think what you're doing here today is likely to have the opposite effect on your next bond package. So my suggestion is if you want to go beyond sort of expanding this to a social justice program, if you want to do something that's really meaningful, get your legislative team in here and suggest to them that you introduce legislation in the 2020 session to repeal the Little Davis-Bacon Act. The prevailing wage law, the Davis-Bacon Act, was explicitly a racial exclusion law. And the best thing you could do for minorities in this state would be to repeal Davis-Bacon in Oregon. Now that would be something you could really be proud of. Thank you.
Mr. Llewellyn.
Good afternoon, Council. I've submitted a couple of pairs of drawings that are part of other material of the same type. These are just the latest updates. Version of the Columbia River Crossing Project, I-5 bridge replacement, and why I believe it's shovel-ready, or as close to shovel-ready as we need to be, why we should determine soon to go ahead with the project. And it's a part of the study that I conducted comparing the Markham Bridge replacement to the Columbia River I-5 projects, both double-deck bridges replaced with single-deck bridges. Salvageable work done during the commission years of study. My rendering for the post office block site, which I live right there. My apartment looks over it. And this is my latest. I think I've submitted three to you now. And this one retains the most of the historic dimensions of the park blocks, the preservation of the walkways of Kearney and Irving Avenues. I'm just really unhappy with the architectural firm that's in charge of the project now. That just every rendering that they've submitted to me, I always find have serious flaws, including this latest one. A little bicycle zigzaggy ramp up to a platform and another 200 feet to get over to the... That's just excessive. And I think in the project's presentation, they said they would want to avoid excessive expenditure of infrastructure. Specifically, they said that. And they've come up with this bicycle plan that's nonsense. I have to go back to, in the last minute, my opposition to the Barber Boulevard Max Light Rail proposal. And compare it to the light rail of the 1990s called the North-South, which did not meet transit advocacy standards, but was able to go back to the drawing board and was replaced with much higher standards, acceptable standards. Now, on Barber Boulevard, that's not going to be the case, and I think that the ideal vehicle for Barber is a bus rapid transit system. Don't think it's been studied fairly at all. So I guess I'll just sum up by saying I don't think you're giving the public enough information to make a fair assessment of the project at all, including this latest thing that's been on the news, this rendering that tells me it's off the charts already and all the studies I've done on it. So I will say that I don't come here as always an opponent to Metro and your good work. But I've given you enough time now to get busy with the bus rapid transit replacement and then see where we go from there, all right? Thank you, Council.
Thank you, Mr. Charles and Mr. Llewellyn. I see no other testimony cards and don't see anybody coming forward. We now move to proclamations. We have one proclamation, resolution number 19-4999, for the purpose of proclaiming June as Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Pride Month in the Metro Region. We will now have Rahi Reddy come forward, and she will be bringing some other speakers up as she makes her presentation.
Good afternoon, Deputy Council Chase and Metro Councilors. My name is Rahi Reddy, and I'm the Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion here at Metro. I'm really honored to be here today to stand as an ally for the LGBTQ+ employees and community agency. Sorry about that. I'm really excited. It's like the energy. Community in our agency and the region, and as an advocate alongside some of the leaders you will hear from today who are pushing for more inclusion and recognition for our diverse communities here at Metro. We know that across the world and the nation, LGBTQ individuals and communities have had tremendous victories and heartbreaking setbacks. And that all of this is what we as diverse communities bring to our work every day. The world is here. This proclamation is a reminder that we as an agency believe that true inclusion means bringing the voices and experiences into our work and to have those voices shape how we are as an employer, really who we are and what we do. And we honor the accomplishments and we keep our eyes focused on there's so much more on our agenda that we need to get done. We want to create a sense of belonging here at Metro for our employees so they can find community, allyship, and solidarity here in this place they call their workplace. Over the last year, the DEI program has partnered in strategic ways to help build more awareness and community competencies to our work with the LGBTQ communities and with our own employees. We hosted numerous trainings here, right here at MRC and at the zoo and soon in Parks and Nature with Bridges 13 on gender awareness and inclusion. I have to say I'm super proud of the zoo. They held several trainings in just a few short weeks so they could help ramp up the capacities of their staff working with the public. And with the help of our LGBTQ plus ERG, HR, and leaders like Rosalind Green, who you will hear from today, we are now working with an inclusion expert to conduct an audit with an audit of our policies with qualitative research with employees to basically create better policies, more inclusive policies for our trans and non-binary employees, and to use the experience and that lens from which they stand to help us to actually build more inclusivity for many more of our diverse employees. And just more immediately, we will be launching gender pronoun name tags that we can add to all our name badges and to use in meetings. So in kind of deep and small ways, we're working to make sure that we are taking the steps that we need to take. So we have so much more work to do, but we have to celebrate the accomplishments and the victories and the leadership along the way. So I'm honored to be here in these efforts with you as our Metro Council and with the talents and energy of our LGBTQ staff and allies. I now want to welcome Melissa Pellavicino, Rosalind Green, Scott Sayer, and Ernie Hayes from our LGBTQ ERG to say a few words after me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Deputy Councilor President Chase. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit nervous. Hello, Councilors.
Take your time.
Before I begin my comments, I just wanted to say this week is Pride Week, and Metro is supporting Pride by going and being in the Pride Parade. We had an amazing turnout, we had an amazing outpouring of support and wanting to be a part participation for the parade. And then right after this council session, we will be re-rising the pride flags in the Apotheker Plaza. So I just wanted to mention that before I started. So hello again. My name is Melissa Pellavicino. I work in the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Program. And although our society has seen many strides forward for my community, for the LGBTQ plus community, the violence and danger faced by queer people of color continues. Yesterday was the third anniversary of Pulse, the shooting of Pulse, which is a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida, one of the largest shootings in U.S. history, with 49 fatalities and 53 injured. Pulse was holding a Latin night. The majority of the victims were people of color. We don't have to look far to see these kinds of attacks right here in Portland in these last few months. Many queer people have reported attacks. In this last February, my wife and I experienced a very unsafe ride in a taxi home from our honeymoon. The intersection of being queer and a person of color is heavy and a dangerous one. Excuse me. It is important that we hold space and acknowledge those most marginalized within the LGBTQ community, those who are undocumented, those who are disabled, those who have deeper, darker skin tones, those who are trans and non-binary. We need to prioritize their safety and their humanity. I want to end by saying that I am proud to be a Metro employee. I am deeply grateful to be a part of the employee resource groups. And I am very happy to be a part of Metro and an organization or a government that is committed to racial equity. I believe through this commitment, Metro can make a more welcoming and safe place for communities across our region. Thank you.
Thank you.
Does this work?
Yes. Okay. It's a little scratchy. Hi, Metro Councilors. My name is Rosalind Green, and I work in Pez. June 7th, 2019, London, England. Two women were subjected to a homophobic attack and left covered in blood after refusing to kiss. Melania and her partner Chris were on a bus when a group of young men began harassing them and discovered there were a couple asking them to kiss while making sexual gestures. June 8th, Detroit, Michigan. A day of fun and celebration took a dark turn when armed neo-Nazis crashed pride celebrations in Detroit and shouted insults while tearing up a rainbow flag. It was all made possible by police who escorted the small group of neo-Nazis while they disrupted the celebration and insulted those in attendance. The members from the National Socialist Movement made Nazi salutes and openly carried weapons while they were protesting. June 12, 2019, Dallas, Texas. Hundreds of people packed a church in the heart of Dallas's LGBTQ community to remember the life of Malaysia Booker. The transgender 22-year-old was shot and killed in May, her body found on a street in Far East Dallas. Her death came just moments after she was brutally beaten in an incident that was captured on a cell phone video and was sent viral on social media. Those who know Booker said she was unapologetic about being transgender, and Booker's death is just one of a string of killings and violent attacks on Black transgender women in Dallas. So while Pride is a time of celebration, it's also a time for reflection. This month marks the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising, when members of the New York Police Department violently raided the iconic gay bar on the evening of June 28, 1969. Reportedly sparking the LGBTQ rights movement. It's difficult for me to gauge how much safer or accepted queer people are compared to 50 years ago, when countless incidents of hate against my community, particularly queer people of color, continue to regularly occur. Just this morning, I woke up to another story of a transgender man of color in Portland who died in a suspected murder on Rocky Butte. And a couple of months ago, members of a hate group called Proud Boys were physically attacking queer people walking on the street. I'm not going to get into what I believe the solution is. All I know is we have to do better, both on a personal level and an organizational level. On an organizational level, I challenge Metro to develop a strategy aimed at recruiting and retaining transgender workers with a focus on non-binary workers of color. And as an organization located in a city with one of the highest transgender populations in the country, we should be a leader in creating welcoming spaces for queer folks. As a wife of a transgender person who works in the medical field, I have a window into observing the fears and trauma non-binary workers face in public spaces, unfortunately, on a day-to-day basis. Despite the violence that continues to exist in our society, I know change is coming. I love my allies. I love my my queer community. Happy Pride.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Deputy Council President Chase and councilors. My name is Ernest Hayes, for the record, and as you know, I'm one of your policy advisors. It is a privilege for me to have the opportunity to make a statement in celebration and support of our resolution for the Pride Proclamation today, but I also want to take a moment to thank and acknowledge my colleagues who have joined me who don't get to spend quite as much time with you, and I'm glad they're having a moment to give you some of their insights as well. Dana Martin, Jazeline Ware, Ashanti Cameron, Claire Legato, Chanel Lindsay, Malaysia Booker, Michelle Tamika Washington, Paris Cameron, Chanel Scurlock. These are the names of the transgender people reportedly murdered in 2019 because of their identity. And every single one of them is a Black woman. Because of the lack of awareness, reporting, and concern about black lives and trans lives in America, we can anticipate that these women are only a horrifyingly narrow representation of a very sad and disturbing trend that is much higher in number. When Metro says it is going to lead with racial equity in all of its work, we lead in honor of these women. We lead with racial equity to ensure that perhaps one day, young, vibrant women like these do not continue to become statistics of the violence wrought on queer and gender nonconforming neighbors, brothers, sisters, and loved ones, the very fabric that make this our community. We celebrate the victories that have been made since the Stonewall riots of 1969, 50 years ago, but those victories remain incomplete and precarious with a federal administration that continues to erode and threaten protections that have been granted to queer Americans and has nearly always left our black and brown community members out. Marsha P. Johnson was a black queer activist, a sex worker, a drag performer, and for nearly three decades a fixture of life on the streets of Greenwich. She battled severe mental illness. She was usually destitute and for much of her life effectively homeless. This is a face of the Stonewall riots. Black and brown non-binary activists like Johnson or Sylvia Rivera, who could no longer stand silently by while the very government purportedly there to protect their right to life, liberty, and privacy, assaulted those very rights. Theirs is the legacy that we today commend, we recognize, we praise, and we strive to lift up as examples of how we as a government can be more aware, more thoughtful, and more deliberate in ensuring we do not continue this legacy of violence against our own, that our policies and proclamations today signal a promise to learn from the past and fight vigilantly to remedy those injustices in our modern practice. I had the occasion to see the West Coast premiere of a trans artist at our very own Portland Institute of Contemporary Art last weekend, and I'd like to share some words from Gordon Hall when speaking about some legislation on bathroom bans. It would also be impossible to analyze the effects of bills like this without thinking through the ways that they are likely to disproportionately affect non-white transgender people for a variety of reasons. First, an intersectional analysis of gender policing acknowledges that fear is not doled out equally, and that a person of color is already more likely to produce anxiety for a nervous white person in a bathroom. Being a non-passing trans person and a person of color works in tandem to increase the possibility of being read as a threat. There are numerous reasons why low-income transgendered people are less likely to pass as the gender that they know they are. And in the United States, the legacy of slavery, segregation, redlining, and lack of access to quality free education has made it vastly more likely that people who are low-income are also people of color. We must acknowledge that it is likely that many of those most adversely affected by laws such as these are both transgender and people of color. As we proclaim June LGBTQ Pride Month, I thank the Council for their continued emphasis on leading with racial equity and acknowledging the undeniable link between the legacy of racism and its impacts on queer bodies and lives. As an openly queer white man, this is a community I am proudly a part of, and I am privileged and honored to be able to remember the lives of my black and brown queer sisters and brothers who do not have the same access to power that I have been given here today.
Deputy Council President Chase, Metro Councilors, I thank you for this opportunity to address you during Pride Month. I came out last century when it wasn't a pleasant or welcoming time to be an LGBTQ plus person. Discrimination was widespread, and many people lived double lives, pretending to be one person at work but living openly at home, if possible. Being an openly LGBTQ person at that time could bring about the loss of employment, cause estrangement from family and friends, and could even result in the termination of your parental rights. At that time, same-sex marriage was but a pipe dream, and the election of openly gay politicians like Harvey Milk seemed like an anomaly that could only happen in San Francisco. How times have changed. Today, I wouldn't give a second thought to outing myself in a job interview or even in testimony in front of elected officials at a public meeting. I no longer worry that neighbors might not accept me, that someone might use my sexual orientation to harm me professionally, or that people I thought were friends will walk away rather than be an ally. In this century, folks in the LGBT community can express ourselves much more openly. In many places, but certainly not all, we have legal protection in public, on the job, and in our homes. Same-sex marriage is now the law of the land, and children without families can now find loving homes with same-sex couples in most places. In the nearly 30 years since I came out, society's views have changed significantly, but the fight for equality continues. knowing that elected officials such as yourselves now recognize our struggles and the inequality we have endured and continue to face makes a self-aware but closeted middle schooler in me smile. Thank you and happy Pride Month to you all.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there other folks that would provide any other comments before we hear from council? So what I would do right now, yes. Thank you so much. I know our council is going to want to have some comments, and so I would just open it up for comments or questions at this time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Council President. As we worked through the development of a diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy at Metro over the last several years, shortly after I joined the council and to this day, there's been concern that focusing on a racial equity lens could lead to lack of appropriate emphasis on other characteristics that for too long in our society have been used to exclude people from power, from the basic needs of inclusion. And I want to state affirmatively that the rights and opportunities of LGBTQ plus people are every bit as important as everyone else's in society. And just as we've moved from the 19th century notions of tolerance toward other races or other creeds, we have to move actively toward inclusion and welcoming of all people, and to recognize our shared experiences, our shared dreams, and fight against injustices that directly affect queer folk, but stab all of us in the heart and hurt our society. I am awed and grateful for your presentations today. It's a very important reminder of how tenuous our civilization can be and how much more we need to do to make Metro a welcoming place itself, but to act as a government to spread that welcome, that engagement, that inclusion beyond our walls and our direct mission, and act as leaders in a broader community. I can't begin to express my gratitude for your testimony today. Thank you.
Thank you to those of you who testified, and thank you to everyone else who is here in support today. We see you, I see you, and strength here in the room. We can feel it. And when I think about Pride, I think about the duality of what we just did in thinking through both our history and our current tragedies and the things that need to change, while also holding the celebratory moment, being able to live out and proud and have family. And when you bring your whole self to work, it's not just you you're bringing. You're bringing yourself. You're bringing your partner or your spouse. You're bringing your kid who may be trans. You're bringing your whole self to work, and that's where we find strength as Metro. So when I think of this resolution, the strength is in the Be It Resolved. Metro is and will continue to take steps to create safer spaces for everyone, residents, visitors, and staff. And thank you for pushing. Thank you for continuing to raise up where there are problems, but also recognize that here we are today with consultancy out helping make sure that we have a full review of our policies so we can be a better employer. Here we are today with a room full of people who have already lifted up the flag once and will do it again today in celebration with leadership. And as we go forward into the Pride Parade this weekend, I look forward to marching with you all, even though I'm a little nervous we might be over capacity. But I think back to just 11 or 12 years ago, and I remember it was one counselor and one staff person. We've come a long way in time when I wasn't even here. So I'm going to lean on all of y'all. Please lean on me as we continue to push and be a better Metro.
Thank you. Did you have a comment?
Yeah. Well, I just want to say thank you for your bravery for being here today and making me in public and making comments publicly, and even if you're nervous, making your presentation. So I always enjoy your, of course, getting a chance to meet you and then having the opportunity to listen to what you have to say. I also want to say thank you it's an honor to work with everybody in this room, regardless of what your orientation is, regardless if you're a lesbian, if you're a gay, if you're bisexual or transgender, queer. It's all just a delightful honor to have a chance to work with you on a day-to-day basis. So thank you so much for being here today and standing up for this, for all that's important to you.
No person should be defined by others based on their sex or their sexuality or their race or other personal factors. And neither should their value as individuals be defined by those factors or the value of their thoughts. And so in as much as there are people and groups in our society who feel and are minimized because of those factors, anything that we can do as a government agency to express and define the value and the equality of all the people that live in our community is an important thing that we can do.
I want to also add my thanks. I mean, I thank you for, it's not easy to get up and testify and share stories with, you know, the listeners on TV and a large room of folks, but it's so important, and even to just be reminded that we have not overcome a lot of the biggest challenges we still have ahead of us, and to think about the number of just Black trans people that have died this year, or in the last week, the amount of violence that's taken place. That doesn't even get to the discrimination we don't even know about or hear about or see. It runs very deep. And I think it's important to have that reminder. Even at the national level, we work a lot on housing. Even at the national level now, there's administrative efforts to allow discrimination of transgender people, to not allow them into a homeless shelter just because they're transgender. So, and one in three, I learned, one in three transgender people have been experienced homeless at some point in their lives. So it is a very significant challenge, even just there. So I really appreciate that. I think that it's also really important to bring our community together the way that you're doing now, and have people celebrating our diversity and the Pride Parade and marching in the Pride Parade, and to have seen how it went from one counselor. I don't think I was that one counselor, but I remember going and have Bill Tolbert inviting me, but making sure I came, you know, and going and being part of that. And it was a pretty smaller, you know, and it grew, it's grown and grown and grown every year. And it's been just, a great way to kind of have people feel loved and appreciated. And I feel that when I go and march in that parade, and I really enjoy that, and I feel that here today. So thank you so much. Are there any other comments or questions? If not, we will vote on the resolution and proclamation.
Do we have a motion?
We need a motion.
I'll move to approve resolution number 19-4999. For the purpose of proclaiming June as Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Pride Month in the Metro Region.
Second.
Please call the roll.
Councillor Lewis?
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Deputy Council President Chase?
Aye. And I'd love to have one more round of applause for everybody showing up here. Thank you. Thank you. We now move on to the consent agenda. Today's consent agenda consists of two items, resolution number 19-4983, and the minutes for the June 6, 2019 council meeting. Is there a motion for approval?
Move the consent agenda.
Second.
All those in favor indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Consent agenda passes. We now move to ordinances second reading for ordinance number 19-1437. For the purpose of amending Metro Code Chapter 2.19, Metro Advisory Committees, to establish a Regional Waste Advisory Committee and to repeal the Solid Waste Alternatives Advisory Committee. First reading and public hearing for the ordinance number 19-1437 took place on Thursday, June 6, 2019. Is there a motion for this ordinance?
Move approval.
I second.
Moved by Councillor Dirksen and seconded by Councillor Stacey. I will now ask Roy Brower, Metro Interim Property and Environmental Services Director, and Hyla Ritter, Metro Interim Solid Waste Compliance Manager, to, if there are questions, they will come forward. Are there any questions at this
time? I just have a comment, but I don't know if I need Roy for it. But
they're there if we need them.
How about if I go and Director Brower can come up if I get myself into trouble? But councillors, if you remember from our meeting last week with the first reading and public hearing of this ordinance, I made a comment that I find the wording of the composition of the list of regional waste advisory committee members too prescriptive to be placed in code. Further, I made the request that we would get a full report from the director and the department on how the committee is working so that we can potentially revisit the makeup of the body and or how it's listed in our code. So just to add clarification to my request, I would have placed that report coming to us as a council in about another 18 months, so 6 months prior to the time for reseating. However, I might not have been as clear as I could have been with my stated request, as after the public testimony, President Peterson referenced my request with a potential review much sooner at 6 months from now. So I just wanted to clarify that my request is further down the road, and I would request that the director come back to us, as makes sense in his and the departmental work plan, in a year to 18 months from now.
And if I could, I would ask the council to charge our acting COO with reminding the director and keeping that on our calendar, however informal it is. I appreciate the clarification.
I just don't want there to be misunderstanding either amongst us with the department or those who are watching this issue closely.
Thank you. Clarity is always the best policy. Are there any other questions or comments or discussion items? Seeing none, I will call on the clerk to call roll.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Deputy Council President Chase.
Aye. And the ordinance passes. Thank you. We now move on to resolution number 19-4985. First, for the purpose of approving the 2019 Nature and Neighborhoods Restoration and Community Stewardship Grants, Krista Gardner, Program Manager of the Nature and Neighborhoods Grants of Community Grants, is here for our presentation with guests.
Good afternoon, Deputy Council President Chase and Metro Council. Chase said, my name is Krista Gardner. I'm the Program Manager for the Nature and Neighborhoods Community Grants, and I'm here to talk to you today about the Review Committee's recommendation for the grant awards and the resolution in front of you. These grants are funded and guided by policy direction from the 2018 Natural Areas Levy Renewal. And Metro will allocate in the next 5 years almost $4 million for two categories of these nature and neighborhoods community grants, the nature education and the restoration grants. Further, these grants are also informed by the policy direction of the Metro Council-approved racial equity, diversity, and inclusion strategy and the associated Parks and Nature Action In particular, this means that, for example, we had equity workshops with Meyer Memorial Trust for our grant recipients as well as our grant applicants. And we are funding projects designed to support the needs of communities of color. The purpose of the Restoration and Community Stewardship Grants is to support and create partnerships in local communities that improve water quality, fish and wildlife habitat, and connect people to nature. The three goals that are used to select grants are to improve water quality, fish and wildlife habitat, strengthen community partnerships, and to increase economic and environmental equity. Two projects which exemplify the policy guidance, purpose, and goals of these grants are DPAVE and POIC Rosemary Anderson High School, funded by 2015, 2016, and 2018 Nature and Neighborhoods Community Grants. I'll let Eric Rosewall, Lee Rappaport, and Liz Call tell you more about themselves, their organizations, and these projects.
Good afternoon, Metro Council. Thanks for having me. I'm Eric Rosewall, and I'm the former executive director of DPAVE, a nonprofit that focuses on urban greening of overpaved places. Since 2008, DPAVE has regreened almost 75 schoolyards, church sites, and a variety of community-based and social service-based places around mostly Portland. In 2017, DPAVE was awarded a Nature and Neighborhoods grant to collaborate with the community at the M&M Multicultural Marketplace in Hillsboro. And the M&M Market is one of the region's oldest and largest authentic Mexican swap meet style markets. And it really serves as a micro enterprise, a small business incubator for Latino communities from across Central America. It's a vibrant place, and it's much more than a market. So M&M is actually a precedent for the Portland Mercado, which you all probably are all a little bit aware of. So the vision for the project was a green community plaza, and we wanted to not only treat stormwater and put in native plants, but we wanted this to be a natural, sustainable extension of the life inside this marketplace. The project was a first for DPAVE in Washington County, and this grant was instrumental in helping DPAVE take the leap to start supporting communities outside of Portland that need access to green space. This is one of the more larger projects we took on. It involved stormwater infrastructure in a large parking lot that was necessary for all the folks that come visit the space, regrading the front of the property and adding swales that dealt with flooding of the building, some entry gardens, a very large pergola to gather under, permeable vendor stalls and other gathering spaces, 18 street trees, and naturescaping along all two of the streets for the building. So a lot of improvements. Many volunteers helped us to pull this off, and the marketplace is a much cooler space now. It also involved culturally specific artwork by four local Latinx artists. So with $25,000 in Metro grant funds, DPAVE and M&M were able to leverage over $60,000 in services and funds from partners, chief among them Clean Water Services and the Tualatin Soil and Water Conservation District. And so we have been able to continue working with these new partners as well as build more bridges in Hillsborough and Washington County to continue to deliver on our equity goals to work with communities on environmental equity. Most notably, you probably saw one of the last slides, the Inukai Boys and Girls Club space just down the street from M&M Marketplace is the project we completed in Hillsborough last year. And it transformed a big parking lot with cars and dumpsters into a multi-purpose play space. So in closing, I'd like to thank the council for continuing to support communities with the Nature and Neighborhoods grant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Lee Rappaport. I'm the program manager for the Natural Resource Pathway for POIC Rosemary Anderson High School. I got to put on glasses. I'd be much more comfortable if we were outside, but...
That would be nice.
Rosemary Anderson, POIC, has four high school campuses, and the Friends of Trees, Rosemary Anderson High School Student Crew Leader Training Program, pulls in youth from all four campuses. I want to thank Metro's Natures and Neighborhood for funding the Rosemary Anderson Student Crew Leader Program and helping make a positive impact on our community's youth. Let's see. The program started in 2006 and the partnership was formed between Rosemary Anderson High School and Friends of Trees with the help of Portland Development Commission, who had provided us with some seed money to develop a crew. Friends of Trees was already working and wanted to partner with us, and Metro had provided them money to green the I-205 corridor. And so that's kind of how the program started in 2006, was to green the I-205 corridor. In 2006, we were an incredibly small program. We had 8 students. We worked on the I-205 corridor. The kids trained in neighborhood street tree training, and that was it. It was a work-study program. Since then, the program's grown a tremendous amount. In 2014-2015, we were able to adopt our first green space at the Columbia Children's Arboretum, which is located near our North Campus. Today, we continue to work at restoring the Arboretum, but we also currently work at the Columbia SLU Natural Area, which is located by the airport. We work at Nadaka Park in Gresham, and we're hoping in the next 2 years to be able to start working in Wilkes Park. So we continue to grow our green spaces and increase the work that we're doing with our youth. Let me go back. Over the years, Portland Parks and Rec, Friends of Trees, and Rosemary Anderson High School, with input from our youth, have added on to the program. We increased our trainings, added education, added site field trips. Until today, we have 30 to 40 hours of project-based education, including a day at Oxbow Park. We have green space, pruning, and neighborhood tree planting trainings, and we work at over 19 planting events each year. The program teaches crew leaders not only restoration landscaping, it teaches them communication, advocating for themselves, working as a team, public speaking, problem solving, networking, and learning how to lead groups of all ages. And if you've ever been to a tree planting, you know what I mean by groups of all ages.
My back.
Yeah. So over the years, the program has grown not only in the work that we're doing in the community, but what we're doing in our green spaces. In 2015-2016, the crews worked with a number of volunteers, putting in about 134 hours of volunteer work. We planted 330 native plants, and we had 9 crew leaders. This year, we had 940 hours of volunteer labor. We had 22 native plants planted, and we worked with 14 crew leaders from all 4 of our campuses, which are New Columbia, North Portland, East County and Rockwood, and Lentz campus. So we bring in kids from all over the Portland area. I wanted to say that, you know, it was interesting listening to something somebody had said prior to us coming up here. I think that this program impacts the lives of youth who have become crew leaders. Some of them have chosen to work with youth. Some of them have chosen to work with the Forest Service. Some work with Portland Parks and Rec. But I truly feel that more importantly than where these youth have taken their lives is that they have all said the Student Crew Leader Training Program has connected them to nature, their communities, and the greater Portland community. And considering that these youth are going to be our future, I think that is invaluable that they understand and have a passion for the environment, because they're going to be leading the charge in the not-too-distant future. Thank you. Liz, do you want to talk? I brought Liz up here. She's impromptu. She's maybe a little bit nervous. I just wanted Liz to say a little bit about what she started as a crew leader this year, and I wanted her to be able to say a little bit about her experience.
Hi, I'm Liz Call. I've been working with Friends of Trees. I've been going to Rosemary Anderson High School for 2 years now, and been working with Friends of Trees for a year now, and it's a great program. I have grown from not wanting to sit here and speak out to being, probably shaking and a little bit nervous to speaking out and talking to you guys, but I really love Friends of Trees, and the program has opened me up and connected me with many different people, and I've gotten to network with many different people, and I have possible job opportunities in the future, and I'm excited for all the opportunities Friends of Trees has given me. Thank you.
You seem to have gotten pretty comfortable with the public speaking, so well done. Are there any other comments or part of the presentation?
Yeah, a little bit more of the presentation. Yeah, thank you. So each grant cycle, environmental nonprofits, culturally specific organizations, and community-based organizations and other grant makers come together to shape these nature and neighborhoods community grants, both through stakeholder input as well as by serving on the peer review committee. And so we have one of our review committee members here today, Ruby Buchholz of Tualatin Riverkeepers, and now recently of the Oregon Community Foundation, to tell you more about the grant review committee's process this year.
Hi, good afternoon, Metro Councilors. Thank you so much for having me. I just wanted to start by saying that I value these grants just immensely. I've been on multiple sides of it. For the last 3 years, I've been with Tualatin Riverkeepers in a variety of roles, but recently I was in the communication and grants coordinator position. So I've seen how much hard work it takes to put these grants together, the partnership building that happens even before the pen hits the paper, the different conversations that you have, and bringing people to the table to talk to it before you can ever hit that submit button. I've also now been able to see the other side of it and being part of this grant review committee. This is my first year being part of it and being able to read the passion that comes through these grants for everybody and all these organizations is amazing. Every single grant that we read had so much passion and energy, and every single organization felt as though this was probably the number one project that needed to happen and needed to be funded. I can tell you that the grant review committee had a very difficult time sometimes reviewing and actually evaluating these. Luckily, we had Krista and some other people there to help us navigate and guide us when we were having these discussions and facilitate what we were looking for. A few things I did want to say is that the grant review committee was really excited to see that the variety of applicants that there were. There were huge, bigger organizations that work throughout the Willamette Valley, all the way to pretty much a volunteer or two that are trying to apply for this grant and finish the work. These grants were brand new projects, brand new partnerships. There were also some that had been partners for years, even decades, that wanted to build on previous work that had been so successful. So it was an incredibly valuable experience to be on that committee. I really also enjoyed the different perspectives that came to the table. There was other nonprofit folks, there was city councilors, there were metro staff, there was private sector, so we really got a great conversation going. We were really excited about projects that also included not only partnerships and community engagement, and obviously restoration and the benefit that the ecosystem and wildlife and habitat would see, but we were also really excited to see the DEI aspect that was coming through in all these grant applicants. It was amazing to see that some of the organizations were just starting out on this and were really curious about it, and others that had been committed to this for years and wanted to expand and grow more into that. The only other thing I really wanted to say today was that I very much approve and am pleased to recommend the entire list of applicants for this year's Nature and Neighborhood Grants. And with that, I'll give that to Krista.
So I'm going to take a moment to run through the grant applications being recommended for funding. This year, Metro received 33 pre-applications worth around $1.9 million in funding requests. The review committee is recommending 15 grant awards of around $800,000, and that's in the resolution in front of you. The review committee recommended the Audubon Society of Portland for a project to expand their backyard habitat certification program to Washington County. They recommended a project to Camp Elso for internships and exposure to environmental careers. To Clackamas River Basin Council for a riparian restoration and stewardship project with a manufactured home community along Clackamas River. To DePave to create 10,000 square feet of new green spaces with native plants, nature play, and stormwater at three Title I elementary schools in the Centennial District. To Ecology in Classrooms and Outdoors for members of the indigenous community to mentor students in traditional ecological knowledge while improving and restoring local habitats. To Friends of Gladstone Nature Park for volunteers and students to restore a hill with native plants that will attract pollinators in the Gladstone Nature Park. To Johnson Creek Watershed Council to remove fish passage barriers as well as add large wood for a salmonoid habitat on a 35-acre property in the Mitchell Creek floodplain. To the National Indian Parent Information Center for an indigenous multi-generational community to use traditional ecological knowledge to restore waterways and wildlife habitats. To Northwest Youth Corps for youth from historically marginalized groups to restore natural areas and engage in green job workforce development. To PIOIC and Rosemary Anderson High School for low-income and youth of color to restore local habitats and receive career track natural resource mentorship and training. For the Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation and Friends of Fano Creek Headwaters for a local community to improve a neighborhood green space along a popular Southwest Portland trail. To the Forest Park Conservancy for habitat restoration and community stewardship of 200 acres in Forest Park in the Vulch Creek watershed with the Latinx community. To Verde for site-specific restoration trainings for environmental leadership in the Columbia Slough watershed. To VOS, Workers' Rights Education Project, for hands-on restoration and skills trainings that improve economic outcomes for day laborers. And finally, to the West Willamette Restoration Partnership to enhance 20 acres of forest habitat in Southwest Portland and to engage the community about trails and access to nature with culturally specific organizations. So I want to thank the team that works on the grant recommendations, as well as thank the Metro Council for your consideration of the grant awards that are before you today.
Thank you. Questions or comments?
Thank you, Krista. It's always interesting to see the diversity not only of the projects themselves, but the organizations and then, of course, the geography. And that I know how challenging that must be as a committee member to get that all figured out of how do we distribute these funds throughout the entire region for a variety of different kinds of environmental projects. But also that the geography, they do it geographically, but also each one of these projects has such different outcomes. So I just want to say thank you. I would like to follow up on the two projects, though, that Mr. Charles mentioned, and I'd like to have you kind of review those with us. First of all, the backyard habitat certification program that funding to Washington County. Can you describe how that works? Because I have... In fact, I need to up my certification. I've been involved in a backyard habitat certification program. I happen to live on a habitat conservation area that is a seasonal stream that supports Johnson Creek. And I know that the benefit of those creeks are to these larger streams, particularly to cool them down, cool the water down that drains through these areas into the creek. So what kind of projects, what backyards are you focusing on in Washington, will this project focus on in Washington County, and do you have particular streams or areas that the organization's focusing on?
Yeah, that's a great question. The Backyard Habitat Program, this is their first expansion into Washington County, and so they're really targeting the expansion with their new organizational partners in that area. And similar to large-scale restoration projects, these backyard habitat projects they're like mini little restoration projects in people's backyards that do benefit streams through those properties that are on riparian areas and upland forest and different types of habitat. You can take the large-scale restoration projects and think of it as a mini restoration project done with the community.
And then can you respond to his comments regarding the Young Black Environmental Internship Program?
Yeah, so the description says environmental internships. Perhaps the description was too broad. Those are nature-based internships working in similar arenas to some of our other programs that are being funded. So restoration programming, nature education programming, and other things that benefit water quality, fish, and wildlife habitat.
Thank you.
Councilor Stacey.
Thank you. Since Councilor Craddock mentioned the Backyard Habitat Certification Program, I have to declare a potential conflict of interest because my wife, Adrienne Stacey, for the last 15, 20 years has maintained that certification on our 4,800 square foot lot. There's some buildings on that lot. One residential yard will not make a difference in the sustainability of our region, but a program that encourages more and more people, like the little plaque that she's very proud of, that her neighbors ask her about when they're admiring the plantings on our side yard, does make it possible for more of our region to be sustainable for wildlife, for avian species in particular, but for all kinds of critters, pollinators and others. So I don't minimize that at all. In fact, I embrace it. I wanted to comment in general on the analysis. I read your memo, Krista, when it came out about a month ago, and was struck by your description of the advances that what we sometimes call the mainline or old line environmental organizations have made in engaging with organizations that represent disadvantaged communities or marginalized communities and communities of color, to make coalitions stronger. And I welcome the news that many local government providers of parks and water quality services are embracing that model as well. It makes our region stronger. It provides future employment opportunities. It provides a breadth of new opportunity for education about the value of habitat conservation and wildlife. And it's a win-win and a double plus. And I appreciate you calling out that progress and our improving record, and I welcome that news. Thanks.
Councilor Lewis?
Sure. I want to thank you not only for your work, but for an excellent presentation today, some great pictures, both of kind of what's on the ground already happening, but also the presentation of opportunities in front of us for grant investment. One I'm going to pick on is the Gladstone Nature Park Butterfly Hill, Friends of Gladstone Nature Park. One, it's in my district. Two, it's leveraging these funds to get volunteers out doing the work of restoration. And three, this is really, you know, kind of the ability to get communities connected to nature, which is the core of why we have this program. And I think the flip side to using funds like this to leverage volunteers to come out is on training a diverse workforce. So I'm really glad to see our investments there. And then I guess in an extra abundance of caution, since Councillor Stacey raised that he has a backyard. I also have a backyard. It is not certified. but the relevant part is that my husband, a member of my family, does have a contract with the Audubon Society of Portland. So state that for the record.
Oh, dear, we can't vote.
Yes, you can. You declared a potential
conflict. Out of an
conflict,
abundance of
yes.
conflicts, abundance of caution, a potential conflict of interest.
You believe you can still cast a vote
I
on this.
I think you're okay on this one. Well, I just pumps me up to see this presentation because I just feel like there are so many incredible programs and things happening, and, you know, it's expensive to do all this kind of stuff, and if you were just paying folks to get out there and do it, right? And so we're getting a lot more bang for it. I think we're spot on in terms of addressing fish, wildlife, natural area protection. And then we're getting all of these other bonuses of creating job opportunities, of inspiring volunteers and people from our community all over the place to come together and recognize the importance of this work. And then our youth, the future, you know, ambassadors for protecting these natural areas. I think that's such an important part of the work is, you know, we've come, and I think some of us were in tears, literally, when some kids came in from SEI one year and talked about how they had gone out and spent a week in a camp, and they, two of them, wanted to be Metro Rangers, and they wanted to kind of continue to do this work in an ongoing, and they'd really never left their neighborhoods. So it's just such incredible and valuable and important, and so I really thank you for this. The one other thing I would ask you, as if you haven't done enough, is as you are doing this work, I really think about some of these programs, maybe many of them, but for example, DPAVE or a tree canopy, I think those are elements that we really need to be thinking about. How could we take advantage of some of the capital dollars that hopefully will be available after November when we pass our bond measure? How can we make sure we have a really strong tree canopy everywhere that we can in our urban areas in our region, and that we're getting rid of heat zones and we are really investing, you know, I continue to push this, that we're investing inside our urban areas and making sure that the folks who are on a day-to-day basis are getting, as we're maxing out on the ability to access nature and protect wildlife and natural areas. Depaving is just an incredible example of that. Can we keep scaling that? I mean, doing that in Title I schools and other places, you know, that's a capital cost. Are there ways we can continue to kind of advance and partner with organizations and look for opportunities, you know, seeded by the work that we're looking at and that we've been doing with our partners? Because it's the partners that are going to make it happen. We just need to step up and support you doing that work. So thank you. And with that, we will now see what the next step is here, which I think is that we have a resolution. And so I would call for a motion for the resolution. We didn't do a motion yet for this resolution, right? So I'd call for a motion. I don't have the number in front of me. For resolution number 194985.
I'll move for approval for the purpose of resolution number 194985 for the purpose of approving the 2019 Nature Neighborhoods Restoration and Community Stewardship Grants.
Second.
Moved by Councillor Craddock and seconded by Councillor Stacey. Is there any more discussion?
Do we want to ask for any testimony? Did we ask for testimony?
Is there an
There's no.
We did say we would be.
Not a public hearing.
Not a public hearing, okay.
But we did offer that to folks that on non-agenda items, so I don't see.
No, I don't think we need to.
I don't think we've received any other cards, or I don't see anybody coming forward. So I will now call for the vote.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Aye.
Deputy Council President Chase.
Aye. Resolution passes. Thank you so much. Now, others may exit, but we continue on with our work. We now are on to resolution number 19-4977 for the purpose of adopting the annual budget for fiscal year 2019-2020, making appropriations and levying ad valorem taxes. Last week, the Metro Council held a successful joint meeting with the Multnomah County Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission, in which we reviewed and clarified elements of the approved budget. Today, we will consider amendments and notes to the budget and hold an additional public hearing to take public testimony on the budget as a whole, as well as the proposed amendments and notes. Lisa Houghton, Metro Financial Planning Manager, is now here for a presentation.
Good afternoon, Deputy Council President Chase and councilors.
As you mentioned, my name is Lisa Houghton, and my presentation revolves around the notes and amendments. The notes and amendments that you are considering and voting on today were reviewed and discussed by Council at last Tuesday's work session. They include the following: 5 Councilor amendments, 6 Councilor budget notes, and 23 department amendments. All changes to appropriations and FTE approved by you today will be included in the fiscal year 19-20 budget. All budget notes approved by you today will also be included in the fiscal year 19-20 budget. Changes in appropriations and FTE that result from the legislative intent documented in the notes will be considered and voted on by the Council through the fiscal year 19-20 mid-year amendment process. If Council approves all of the proposed amendments and notes, the 19-20 adopted budget will have resources and requirements of $1,349,000,000. That's a round number, and we'll have 959 FTE. There's a slight net decrease in total appropriations due to the large reduction in GO debt service payments that we've spoken of earlier. And FTE will increase by 2.00. That ends my very brief presentation. On a side note, though, I would just like to say, as an audience member today, listening to the earlier presentations reminds me how very lucky I am and proud I am to work for this agency. Thank you.
Thank you. So I want to check in on our procedure here. We were about to open a public hearing, do we need to have the motion on the table to pass the budget, or is that already on the table from last week? Because it's not in the script here. Okay.
I think right now you're going to consider some amendments.
Okay.
And then you're going to I would do the public hearing.
Yes.
And then you can consider your amendments, unless you want the public to consider the amendments.
That helps me. Yeah. That reminds. Okay. So we have this resolution, and what we're doing is finalizing the package here with the amendments, and so that's really the step we're taking here, just to be clear with all of us. And so we will have our hearing, and then we will call for a motion to amend the resolution to include all the amendments that we have.
I think I would recommend that you do the amendments first and then do the public hearing, just in case anyone wants to comment on the amendments.
Okay, so I will call, so we're going to do them en bloc. So I will call for a motion to amend resolution 19-4977 to include the councilor amendments and notes and department substantive and technical amendments en bloc.
I so move.
Second.
Okay, so we leave that motion on the table. We are not going to vote on that at this time. And then now I will open our public hearing. Please come forward and state your name for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes if there's any way that would like to comment. Okay. Seeing no public comment, the public hearing is closed. And we have the motion. We have a second. Okay, this is opportunity for council questions and discussion. No questions. Is there any?
I think we had a great discussion last week.
Yes,
discussion. Okay, folks felt like they had the opportunity to talk about their notes and amendments. We did have a lot of substantive conversation, and this is a step in the process that has involved a lot of conversation. So, folks who are kind of listening at home, it may be helpful to understand that.
Mr. Deputy Council President, as an older member of this council, I will say for the record that our new president and our new council members added an additional level of scrutiny and inventiveness to this budget process, which I respect and appreciate. So if anything, there's been more detailed look at many of the elements of the budget than in some past years, for which I'm grateful.
I concur. Okay, I will now call on the clerk to call roll.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen.
Clarification, are we voting on the amendments?
Yes. We're finalizing the package that we will now vote on next week.
Okay, because what's on the screen is adopting the annual budget.
It says motion to amend resolution 194977.
Okay. Yes.
This is the motion.
We're now voting on the motion to approve the amendments.
To include the amendments in the budget.
Yes, what you're voting on right now is an en bloc motion to amend the budget to add all of the amendments, the technical amendments, the councilor amendments, and the department amendment.
But this is not the vote.
This is not the vote on the actual budget. That will take place next week.
That's my point.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure everybody understood.
That's correct. Yeah. But if you had some issue with the amendments at this point, this would be the time to
right. Package
those.
Voting on the amendments, I vote yes.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Deputy Council President Chase.
Aye. And the motion passes. So this concludes our consideration of amendments and notes to the budget at this time. Council consideration and vote on resolution number 19-4977 as amended is scheduled for Thursday, June 20th. Thank you. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we will now have updates from our COO, Andrew Scott.
Great. Thanks very much. Just one quick update, which hopefully you all saw. Tuesday, our RID Patrol went live with a new webpage providing an overview of the Metro Trash Bag Pilot Program. This program is really innovative. It offers a disposal option to people experiencing homelessness, reaches out to them, gives them trash bags, comes and picks them up when they're ready, sort of helps keep both the community and those campsites clean. There's some really great content in that email that went out that you can share with your networks, including a video that was produced in partnership with Outside the Frame, which is an organization that seeks to empower homeless and marginalized youth to tell their stories. And Roy Brower shared some talking points with your policy advisors as well. Solid Waste staff, I know, are really excited to launch the work, and so if you have any questions, you can contact Rob Nathan, Stephanie Rawson, or Roy Brower. That's it for me.
Great. Nice and short. Thank you. Any council updates? Council Cranick.
I just want to report, yesterday was the groundbreaking ceremony for the City of Gresham's Urban Renewal Rockwood Rising Project. I unfortunately wasn't able to be there, but I know there were well over 300 people that attended. It was really a remarkable milestone for this project. The urban renewal area was created in 2003, so here we are now in 2019, 16 years later. It is the first groundbreaking for this project, and everybody was quite excited. This particular project is focused on the triangle. They call it the Rockwood Triangle. It's where Burnside and Stark cross, and then on the west side is 181st. This includes the Blue Lines Transit Center, the Rockwood Transit Center, and there was formerly a property that Fred Myers owned and had a former grocery store there. So this is going to be multiple projects, actually, buildings that will be on the project, on the parcel, which will include commercial use, include housing. There's going to be a market there where, and it's an incubator for small businesses that want to get into the food business. And Metro's been able to help support this project in a variety of ways. One of them is through our solid waste funds. We were able to help them purchase freezers for the future preparation, food preparation, to be able to store it. Of course, our Todd dollars, our transit-oriented development dollars, are also supporting the project. And then, of course, through our planning dollars and funds, we've been able to support the development of the plan for this. So it's very, the community was very excited yesterday, even in the very hot weather. Hundreds of people turned out to celebrate this, and it was a happy time to see that this project is finally beginning to be constructed. Roy Kim is the developer, and just a wonderful person to work with, and his patience and his ability to be creative and his commitment to building a project that really is going to make a difference for this part of the region. My respect for him is very high. Delightful man.
Nice. Other updates?
Thanks, Councillor. Thanks, Councillor Chase. I almost forgot I went to MPAC last night. I was just here so many hours ago, but we had a great MPAC meeting. We did achieve quorum, even though it was 97 and sunny outside. And we had a presentation on C2P2, and it was a really good, robust discussion. folks at the table didn't necessarily have the background because not every jurisdiction has been part of the development of the program and project. So good discussion. We then moved into a presentation on our pilot, working on our innovation and technology as connected to transit and the four different projects that have been launched, connecting people to better transportation options using new technology. And then we also had an opportunity to discuss in greater depth the T2020 process and the development of our regional transportation package for 2020 ballot.
Great. Any other updates? Okay. We are hereby adjourned. In our next meeting, we usually we are adjourned. Seeing no further discussion, meeting is adjourned. The next regular council meeting is scheduled for Thursday, June 20th at 2 at the Metro Regional Center Council Chambers. The Metro Council will now move to the Council Annex to meet in executive session pursuant to ORS 192.6602D to conduct deliberations with persons designated by the governing body to carry on labor negotiations. Thank you.